Welcome, everyone, to episode 418 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and today we're going to take a look at the state of the Western Conference playoff race. Namely, we have to examine whether the Los Angeles Lakers are in real trouble here. Before we get into that, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some five-star reviews. We are being hosted by Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. And we're recording our show today on Locker Room, the only live audio social network for sports fans. Listen to our show on Locker Room before it hits your iTunes feed, engage with us in real time, or start your own room to react to the draft, trade news, and more. Take the mic and download Locker Room in the Apple App Store. Joining me today is a guy who I know is excited to talk more about Aaron Gordon and the Denver Nuggets, Morten Jensen. How's it going?
You know, I am excited, and I am doing well personally. I'm pissed, though, because once again, in Minnesota, we are seeing that it apparently is a crime to be black. So I'm frustrated. I'm sitting over here in a country where theoretically I could just decide, well, I have a good country here that's not completely insane when it comes to gun laws and police brutality and whatnot. But you know what? For the life of me, I just cannot disengage. I can't. I think this is too important. I think we're at a turning point right now in the history of the world when it comes to race and police and everything. I think I have a social responsibility to follow along. But as I do, Brian, I just get more and more heartbroken whenever I see these things. It's haunting and it's frightening, and I am seething on the inside.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you tried to divorce yourself from U.S. news in 2021, which I told you was a very good idea. Yeah. Unfortunately, it's not always possible, especially, you know, we saw the report from Woj a little bit ago where they're still discussing whether to postpone tonight's Timberwolves-Nets game. So this is another example of where, you know, the real-life implications trickle into this basketball, this insular basketball world that we're all concerned with here as well. So, yeah, I mean, the only thing to say, I think, is, you know, thoughts go out to the family of the victim. And, you know, I hope everyone in Minnesota stays safe as best as possible. I know there have been protests last night. I can't imagine those will die down anytime soon. You know, so at some point, something needs to change. But we've been saying that for how many years now? And nothing has so far. So hopefully, you know, hopefully we don't see too many more of these incidents before we actually spur action. But it's hard not to be jaded at this point.
Yeah. No, you said it best there. And then unfortunately, I think it's grown so normal in a way that people are getting numb to it. I've noticed a trend recently also that a lot of African Americans are considering just leaving the United States, basically saying this is not going to change, which again is just so much harder and heartbreaking because look, they built that country up from the ground. No one should be forced to leave. It should be a safe country to live in. And I know that we're supposed to be talking basketball, and I apologize for taking time out of that, but I think it's important sometimes to raise these issues. I just feel so bad whenever these things come out. And like you, I'm almost reaching that point where I just go, again? Like, that's my first reaction. Mm-hmm. The seething anger comes in. My first reaction always like one more time, like again, another, and then it starts all over. It's a perpetual cycle that really needs to end.
Yeah. Well, you know, basketball is a nice distraction and a diversion from real life events. And, you know, we're going to spend most of the episode talking about basketball today, but it's also worth remembering. We saw it last year, really throughout the summer, where, you know, all of these players are people too, and these issues are affecting a lot of their communities. We saw it with George Floyd. We saw it with Jacob Blake during the bubble where, you know, the Bucks in particular were too upset to play and they postponed a playoff game because of, you know, it was just weighing on their minds. So, yeah, we have to remember that even as we're distracting ourselves watching basketball and talking about the playoff race, a lot of these guys have this in the back of their minds as well, and we need to be right. respectful of that.
Right. And also, if you're on Twitter and you want to discuss what's happening in the world right now, do not tell anyone to go watch the video, or if he didn't resist arrest, like, don't. Just shut the hell up if you start going down that route.
Yeah, definitely. All right. We should pivot to basketball, unfortunately. We have to start with the Los Angeles Lakers, I think, because they came into the year as the presumed title favorites after winning...
The overwhelming title favorites, yes.
Yeah, after winning the chip last year, we thought they got stronger with adding Dennis Schroeder, Marc Gasol, Montrezl Harrell in the offseason. The season has not gone according to plan for them. Marc Gasol... His fit has been questionable. They added Andre Drummond, and that pissed him off, which we talked about a few episodes ago. But more importantly, they've been without their two best players for a couple weeks now. In one case, Anthony Davis, almost 2 months he's been out. It sounds like they are coming back sometime soon. ESPN reported on April 10th that Anthony Davis could return to play in the next 10 to 14 days. And LeBron James could be back in the lineup in 3 weeks, so probably end of April, early May. So reinforcements are on the way, Mort. But in the meantime, the Lakers have slipped to fifth in the West. They're a game behind the Denver Nuggets. They have a 3.5-game lead over the Dallas Mavericks for a guaranteed spot in the playoffs. So it seems like they will still probably avoid the play-in tournament, but... It's starting to look more and more likely that they're not going to finish with the top four seed. They're not going to have home court advantage in any round of the playoffs. So if you're a Lakers fan, Mort, how concerned are you about their chances of winning a title this year?
I am concerned if the road to the title goes through Utah and Denver, and then finally, the Clippers, for example. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm concerned if the toughest road ahead is basically against the tougher teams in the West. Then I'm concerned. If by some chance they just start hitting fire, they end higher up in the rankings, and they somehow find themselves really high up again, and they are going to be beating on the worst teams, then I'm not concerned. But right now, it is going to be a struggle, a far longer struggle than I think we anticipated. There's also another component that we need to take into account, which is Anthony Davis has missed 2 months, so he needs to get reintegrated into the offense and defense, because being gone 2 months, I mean, some people have this idea that when a player is back from injury, it's no problem, just throw him in there, he's exactly the same, and the team is exactly the same. That's not how basketball or sports in general works. Like, you have to get reacclimated to your teammates, to schemes. Like, there's a whole process, especially for someone who's a high volume offensive player and who's basically your anchor defensively as well. This is a guy who is going to take up all of a sudden a lot of possessions that hadn't been taken up over a 2 month period. This is a guy who's going to change your defensive schemes dramatically so. So, yeah, it's not going to be one of these things where as soon as Davis comes back, it's all easy peasy. Like, yeah, sure, the Lakers might win, but don't get it twisted. There's still going to be a period of time where he needs to, like, recalibrate himself. And the same is going to happen for LeBron because he's been gone for 12 games. So, yeah, I'm not at a point where I'm super worried. After all, these guys are stars for a reason. Like, when they come in and when they come back, players are going to answer to them. They're going to play off of those guys. So I'm not saying it's like a year-long process or anything, but it's something to take into account. It is going to take a little bit of while. And then you also have to factor in when the playoffs roll around, are these guys a well-oiled machine, or are they still a lot of individual components trying to fit together?
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, they haven't had, especially Davis with the new pieces, hasn't had a ton of opportunity to develop chemistry with these guys. He's played 23 games this season. So, it could be a learning experience on the fly. As you said, LeBron and Anthony Davis are two elite players, and it's hard to count them out in any playoff series, especially given the supporting cast that they have. But at the same time, you do have to wonder, have they missed too much time to, have their defensive schemes in order, have their offensive schemes in order, know how these guys fit next to these two high usage superstars when they're back in the fold. They'll have a couple weeks of the regular season to get, back into a groove before the playoffs begin. But as you said, it's not like the Lakers are looking at an easy first round matchup right now. If the playoffs started today, they would face the Denver Nuggets in the first round. If they win that, they're probably playing the Utah Jazz in the second round, and then most likely the winner of Phoenix Clippers in the conference finals.
Phoenix is there too. This is a tough road, man. This is four quality teams that they need to get through at some level.
Yeah, right. And, if you're the two seed, you're going to at least duck one of them in the first round. You're still going to probably end up playing two of them, but there's a difference between playing two of them and playing three of them, and playing two of them, one of them at home, one of them on the road, or two of them at home versus, if you're the five seed, you're not going to have home court advantage barring an upset on the other side of the bracket. So, does that matter, and how much does that matter? We saw the Lakers win the title last year in a controlled environment where no one had fans. So maybe it doesn't end up mattering all that much, but it's just something to keep in the back of your mind when you're, looking ahead to the playoff race and trying to fill out your postseason bracket of,
Right.
Yes, they have the talent to win, but there are a lot more question marks, I think, with this year's team than there were last year's. And I was somewhat skeptical of last year's team, I'll be honest. So maybe...
Oh, I think we all were. I had... Remember when I had them being bounced in the first round to Portland?
Yeah. I mean...
Oh, you can say it, Brian. Well, that was dumb, Mort.
Well, maybe we're going to have the same situation in a couple months here where we look back and Anthony Davis and LeBron James stay healthy and they plow through the West and we're like, oh, we were concerned about nothing again. But, we just have to analyze the picture with roughly 20 games left until the playoffs. Here's where we stand. These guys are both out of the lineup. The Lakers have been basically a 500 team without them, which... It's not surprising. I don't think you need to read into their record without these two guys and say, oh, they're a 500 team. They're definitely going to get bounced in the first round. But is Anthony Davis going to stay healthy when he returns? Are we guaranteed that he's going to stay healthy? Given the nature of that injury, I don't know. And given just how banged up he tends to get throughout a season, I don't know. Maybe the Lakers are just playing it super, super safe, as they should be, and maybe he could have come back a month ago, and they're just, saying, we don't really care. We're going to wait this thing out as long as possible, because the only thing that matters is him being healthy for the playoffs.
Right.
But, I don't have 100% certainty that Anthony Davis, upon his return, is going to make it healthy for the rest of the season, and that's another complicating factor in all of this.
It is. It really is. And so here's the thing. You actually said, does it matter? Like all these things. It matters and it doesn't matter. So at the end of the day, this is still them on a mission, right? At the end of the day, you still have to beat everyone else to reach the mountaintop. So if you look it through it through that perspective, no, nothing matters. You have to beat the best to become the best. That's just how the game is. But the road ahead can absolutely be more challenging one year than it could be any other year. I mean, when you really look at it, right, is it fair that the best team in each conference plays the worst team in each conference in round one? Like, isn't that just giving – I'm not saying the rich get richer, but isn't that just giving the best teams just far more of an advantage? I know that people look at it as, well, that's what they've earned by playing so well over the first 82 games. Well, hell, I don't care. If they're that good, why not throw them into like the hardest competition out there? That could be fun right off the tip. I mean, let's be honest here. A lot of people, casual NBA fans, they don't really tune in until we reach the second round.
Right. Well, because there just typically aren't that many upsets in the first round, or if they're like a 1-8 upset is exceedingly rare, even a 2-7. Like we'll see 3-6, 4-5 maybe, but yeah, you're not typically going to see the best teams go down in round one. But I mean, to your point, the Lakers might be the example of this, where again we thought going into the season they were the favorites, and now they're going to have to go through this most difficult road possible.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about that road. Let's go into that. And before we do, Brian, we just got a Vooch tweet that the game between the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Brooklyn Nets, it has been postponed.
There we go. Okay, so yeah, let's just start at the top of the conference and work our way down.
Yes.
So Utah Jazz, we've had this discussion before, but they are best record in the NBA by 2.5 games over the Phoenix Suns. They have the best differential in the NBA by far, best net rating in the NBA by far. They're at 9.5. Phoenix is next closest at 7.0. I think this question is going to linger over them, similar to a couple other teams that we'll discuss this episode and next, about, you know, are they a legit title favorite until they actually win something meaningful? You know, last season we saw them get knocked out in a great first round series, and they were without Bojan Bogdanović, which is very notable. But what do you think of the Utah Jazz, Mort? Are you buying them as a legit title contender?
Let me put it this way. The league's best team, the guy who's played the most minutes on the league's best team, is Royce O'Neal, and they're still where they are. considering that, hell yes, I believe in them. Like, when you consider just how few minutes the primary guys on their roster play, yeah, absolutely, because those minutes are going to get ramped up in the playoffs. It's a tight group. They have so much competence on both, defensively, offensively, on the glass. There's just so much talent there. Do they have their shortcomings? Yes, they do. I mean, Rudy Gobert is not a Joel Embiid, Nikola Jokic type of center who can go out and routinely give you 30 points and 4 or 5 assists and 3-point shooting and all that. But he doesn't have to. He is there for one particular reason, and that is shutting down the paint defensively. Then you have Bogdanović, Conley, Mitchell, hell, Royce O'Neal, Joel Ingles, Jordan Clarkson. I mean, they have so many role guys. They have so many spot starters who are just doing a wonderful job. George Niang, of all people, are coming in and hitting 41% from downtown on high volume for someone playing 14 minutes per game. They just have so many weapons. So, yeah, I would be a complete hater if I sat here and started calling them a pretender, which I have seen people do, and I'm just very flabbergasted at that. Like, I think they've proven enough, right? I mean, I'm not saying they're going to win the championship, but to sit here and look at what they've done and go, nah, I don't buy it. Right. That is such BS.
Yeah, I mean, they have the third best offense and the third best defense right now. So that's typically one of the markers of a title contender. Yes. You know, they have top 10 marks in both categories. Utah does considerably. Lead the league in both three-pointers made and attempted, and they're shooting 39% from three. So they are fourth in terms of accuracy from deep. So I think that is probably the one thing that I've seen a few people pick at in terms of their legitimacy as a title contender. And it goes back to the same arguments we heard, early Warriors day. Can the jump shooting team win a title? And clearly the Warriors proved they can. I think it's it's reductive to call the Jazz just a jump shooting team, because I think they do have other ways of scoring. But, unquestionably, that the three ball is the reason that has fueled their massive jump in offensive production this year. I don't think that is really arguable at this point. I guess one question I do have about them is Bogdanović and whether he's going to be kind of their defensive weak link and how they adjust if teams really start going after him in the playoffs.
I was hoping you would bring something up in this vein.
Good. Okay.
Because after we recorded the last time, we spoke a little bit, off air, and one of the things you and I talked about was, why is it that defense is being so romanticized to the point where, you know, guys who are, we were talking about the draft, and a lot of guys who are projected to get drafted this year really don't have an established offensive game, but they do project as good defenders. And I kind of raised the point to you, if you are a good offensive player, but you are a poor defender, you somehow get a very bad rep. But if you are a very strong, capable defender with virtually no offensive game, you're lauded and praised because you play defense as if that somehow was far more admirable or impressive or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think if Bojan booked... Now, I agree with you. Bojan is absolutely going to be the defensive weak link. But you know what? Offensively, he's a zone buster. He's hyper-efficient. Okay, this year isn't necessarily the same year as he had last year when he was scoring over 20 points per game and all that. But look, I mean, 38% from downtown on six attempts, 86% from the line. I mean, yeah, he is a trustworthy offensive player. He can spot up. He can even create his own off the dribble. Like, why are we discounting what he could then respond offensively? You know what mm-hmm. I mean? So if people target him defensively and they score on him, okay. But that doesn't make him a nothing on the other end of the floor. That means he can sort of level the playing field by getting hot and shooting and stretching the court and giving Donovan Mitchell and Joe Ingles and Mike Conley the necessary space, and Jordan Clarkson as well. Those guys space enough to operate on their own. I mean, if this was a guy who wasn't a highly advanced offensive player, sure, I would say this is a major problem,
mm-hmm.
but he is. So, yeah, it's still a problem, but I think being able to deliver on the other end of the floor kind of doesn't negate it entirely, but it lessens the gap.
Yeah, and I think the other thing working in their favor is they don't have to play him. They could go to a Joe Ingles. Like, if he is getting just destroyed, they can just turn to Joe Ingles and have him take Bogdanovich's place on a given night or in a given matchup. And I don't mm-hmm. think they would lose a ton in terms of, I mean, Ingles is shooting almost 50% from three-point range on 5.5 attempts per game. So
scroll down and look at his true shooting percentage, Brian.
A casual, let's see. Oh, mm-hmm. casual 72.3%. Yeah, that sounds about right. So
for a perimeter player.
Ah, man. Yeah, so I think the things working in their favor, one, this is just a different team than what we yeah. saw last year. It seems like Mike Conley in particular has been so much better this year than he was last. Like, this is the version of Mike Conley that they thought they were getting last year, and right. it just took him, you know, he's been in Memphis for more than a decade, so it wasn't an instant fit. He had to figure out how to play with different type of teammates, Gobert in particular, but now he's figured it out. He's been really good. Donovan Mitchell has been sensational, especially since the All-Star break. Mm-hmm. As you said, Gobert, you know, has his limitations to some extent, especially offensively, but I think this team just fits together really well.
Yeah.
And, you know, are they the deepest team in the NBA? Can they match the Brooklyn Nets' depth? No, not really. But do I feel really good about their top eight, top nine guys, which is all that really matters in a playoff series, assuming they all go in healthy?
Yeah,
yeah, I do. So, like you, do I think, you know, would I place money on the Utah Jazz at even odds to win the title this year? Probably not. I mean, I think there are a few teams that I would favor over them, but do I think they have a chance to win the title this year? Like, at least a 5 to 10% chance? Yeah, hell yeah.
Yeah. Do you have any more questions for yourself? No, what? But I agree. But by the way, can I ask you this, because I think you're on a right tangent here.
Yeah.
You just brought up the Brooklyn Nets.
Mm-hmm.
If the Brooklyn Nets went to the finals, I personally would look at Utah as the best team you could go up against them. Like, I wouldn't even take Lakers there. I think from a scheme and matchup dependent perspective, I think the Jazz would make the far more interesting matchup, right?
Like, you would pick the Jazz to beat the Nets because of their scheme?
Yeah, and like, just how they match up.
Trying to think. I mean, I guess the good thing about the Nets from the Jazz perspective is that they don't have a reliable stretch big to really punish Gobert. Whether, you know, Jordan, Nick Claxton, like Blake Griffin, Aldridge, whoever. If you're goading LaMarcus Aldridge into taking any shots at all, it's a win. Like, if you're getting Aldridge to take mid-range jumpers, three-pointers, whatever the case may be, I think the Jazz would live with that. Same with Griffin, honestly, even though he has really done well to reinvent himself as a three-point shooter late in his career. I guess my concern would be, do the Jazz have the wings and guards defensively? But honestly, I don't hate, you know, Conley on Kyrie, Mitchell on Harden. Right. Mitchell on Harden could be rough.
It's not a wash. I think Harden would outperform that matchup, but you would also have to figure that Jordan Clarkson's going to play a lot on the off guard. Mm-hmm. So, and Harden isn't, from a perimeter based perspective, not the greatest defender.
Right.
So it would be Mitchell and Clarkson against Harden on the defensive end, right? That's suddenly a lot of firepower. And at the same time, you could also switch Joe Ingles onto Harden here and there. True. Now, would he be super effective? I don't know, but I do think he gives them a pretty decent odds, some decent odds at least. The big thing for me is Royce O'Neal on KD. Mm-hmm. KD will obviously have some games where he just completely burns him.
Right.
But I do think O'Neal is the type of guy who could come in and at least make KD work for it. Like, really throw him off his favorite spots so he'll have to overcompensate in other areas. Now, it's KD, so he can. So that's definitely one of those things. But I think O'Neal gives them a fighting chance with him. And, of course, Gobert is just going to shut down every drive ever, it feels like.
Yeah. Yeah, it's certainly possible. It would be a fascinating matchup for a number of reasons. But, yeah, I don't know who I'd pick in that. It's a good question.
Yeah, I think that's the finals I would be hoping for if it came to that. Like, if the Nets are making the finals, I would want the Jazz to represent in the other end.
Yeah, I mean, it would be like the NBA's worst nightmare from a ratings perspective, but it'd be really fun from the 10 people who are going to watch that finals.
No, but you know what? Honestly, that would probably be good too, right? Because then it's not just LA, Brooklyn. Yeah. I mean, I get it from the NBA's perspective, but I mean, fans are already a little bit tired of that whole narrative shaping up. So, yeah.
All right, so let's slide down to number two in the West, Mort. The Phoenix Suns, who second best record in the NBA right now at 37-15. Chris Paul has done exactly what we thought Chris Paul would do for this team. They are 7th in offensive rating, 5th in defensive rating, have the 2nd best net rating in the NBA. But I feel like I am just not seeing a ton of Phoenix Suns title buzz around. Do you buy them as a legit threat to the Jazz, the Lakers, Clippers, Nuggets?
On a slightly lesser tier, yes. And I don't want Suns fans to get the wrong idea. That does not mean I don't have them as a championship contender. I think clearly they are. Mm-hmm. But I do think that the Jazz have the edge there just a little bit. I do think a fully healthy Los Angeles Lakers squad can really bring them a lot of issues. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, the Nuggets and Clippers are still a little bit up in the air. I still have to figure out what those teams are. I mean, the Nuggets have played, 8 games with Aaron Gordon? And they look great, so that's really not a problem. But I want to see how things look when the honeymoon is over. I want to see how they kind of shake out a little bit. Mm-hmm. The Clippers, they are interesting. I don't know how they would match up with them. I think that almost has to be something that we see before we can really develop an opinion on it. But no, I they're there. I mean, they have just great two-way play from Mikal Bridges. Chris Paul is still a plus defender, still one of the most steady offensive point guards in the entire NBA. Devin Booker is, well, hell, Devin Booker. Mm-hmm. They got the wings in Jay Crowder, Cameron Johnson, both of whom have size, can hit the three. And then, of course, comes DeAndre Ayton. I did a video on him, I think a month or so ago, maybe a little bit longer. And basically, here's where I'm at with him. I think he's sacrificing this year. Mm-hmm. I think basically now it's championship or bust this year, to the point where the Suns brass have just gone, you know what, DeAndre, this is not going to be a development year for you. Sorry, it's just not. Do whatever you can to be effective. Defend, rebound, score when you have a chance, get to the line when you have a chance. But this is Chris and Devin's show. You need to feed off of those guys. We just do not have the time to go into the development process right now. And then maybe next year it's back to, okay, let's get you a counter move. Let's give you some more advanced moves again. Just let's develop you. Let's get you back on the right track where we thought you were. Mm-hmm. I think offensively right now he's feeding off of everyone else. So I'm not worried about his long-term development. I'm not worried about his long-term game. But I think it's fair to question, is he going to be enough deep into the playoffs? I don't foresee troubles in round one, maybe depending on who they meet, of course, but when he goes up against Gobert in a seven-game series, or he goes up against Anthony Davis in a seven-game series, or Nikola Jokic, can he stop those guys?
Right.
I don't know. I mean, okay, nobody's stopping Jokic, we know that. But, I mean, I just don't know if he's there.
Yeah, no, I think that's probably the biggest question I have about the Suns' title chances this year as well. And that isn't to say DeAndre Ayton hasn't taken major steps forward in his 3 years in the NBA, because he has, and I think he's going to be a very, very good player. I think he already is, but I think, you know, this is not the best we're going to see of DeAndre Ayton. He's still super young. He's still figuring some things out. As you said, he's admitted he's taken a backseat to Booker and Paul. And that, you know, that's just his role, is not to have the ball funneled through him on offense and score 25 points a game every single game. Like, he knows Booker is the meal ticket. Paul's going to have the ball in his hands a lot. He's just got to play defense, rebound, and, you know, the ball will find him at points throughout the game.
Right, right.
But, yeah, I do have those questions against a Jokic, against Anthony Davis. How will he fare in a seven-game series? I think if you're plotting a path for the Suns to win the title this year, you're hoping they duck those two teams. You can get the Clippers. I don't think the Clippers have a big that can really punish him. And, yeah,
he could definitely feast on the Clippers.
Yeah, and then the Jazz as well. It's not like he's going to have, you know, I wouldn't go running my offense through him and having him challenge Gobert, but it's not like Gobert is going to put 40 and 15 on him either, you know.
Right.
So I think you're hoping to avoid those teams, and then similar to what we just talked about, like, you want to avoid Philly, you don't want any part of Embiid, but could you go against Brooklyn and they won't have a big to punish you? Even Milwaukee to some extent. I mean, Giannis would probably play the five, or they could do a PJ Tucker stretch five situation. So I think that could be problematic, but. You know, I think that's kind of the Brooklyn and the Clippers are very similar in the sense of they don't have that traditional, like, dominant big man who's going to drop 25 on your head if you don't have a defensive stalwart in the middle. So that's probably the Suns' best path to a title. I'm with you. I think, you know, they, again, would I put money on them at even odds to win this year's title? No, I would not. I would take the field. Do I think there is a realistic pathway for them to win the title? Yeah, if things break right. I don't think we should, you know, I think there's probably some skepticism about them, just given Chris Paul's playoff history. I hear it. I don't necessarily think it's fair. I don't think we should hold those failings against him in the past, because, again, we, you know, it's been discussed over and over again, but if he doesn't strain his hamstring in Game 5 against the Warriors, we're having a very different conversation about Chris Paul's playoff legacy now, you know. Right. Like, Kyle Lowry was the same deal for how many years? Like, Kyle Lowry couldn't get over the hump, and then he finally did. Now it's like Kyle Lowry, greatest Raptor of all time, Kyle Lowry, proven winner. Like, it just takes one time. Chris Paul, we saw with the Thunder last year, with the Suns this year, you add him to your team, and your team is going to be markedly better than what it was the previous year. So... He's really done a ton in terms of instilling that culture. And I guess, you know, Jay Crowder as well, with his run in the finals with Miami last year, will have some invaluable experience to instill upon these guys. But, you know, a lot of them are still really young. Booker, Bridges, Ayton haven't tasted the playoffs, so they don't really know what to expect here. And I think that's another thing if you're going against a more experienced Denver team or Lakers team, that's something else that might trip them up. If we're, you know, in a pressure-packed game six, they're down 3-2 going on the road. I guess that would only be against the Jazz at this point. But, you know, or even game seven. So, you know, I don't want to totally rule them out, but I don't think I would pick them to win the West right now.
Right. Yeah, it sounds weird, but they're an elite team that's still a little bit on the outside looking in.
Yeah,
and they kind of have to shove that door open to get into the party.
Right.
Which, you know what? If they do, they're more than welcome. That's really how I look at it. Like, if they could do that, by all means, I'm not going to sit here and go, oh no, it's got to be next year. I think there is a pathway within that it could push that door open. But to go back to your point, remember when you said just a couple minutes ago that if you are playing against the Brooklyn Nets and you're getting LaMarcus Aldridge to take shots, you've basically won?
Mm-hmm.
That's how I'm thinking about the Suns and kind of DeAndre Ayton as well. If I can force DeAndre Ayton into becoming a high-volume offensive center in a playoff series and just kind of force the ball into him and get it out of the hands of Devin Booker and Chris Paul, you know what? I would take those odds.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a fair point.
Because he's only averaging 10 shots attempts per game this year. Now, if you're throwing him into a situation where he has to, every single game, take 15 to 17, that's going to be out of his comfort zone.
Mm-hmm.
I would absolutely invite the post every single time.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, if you're not... A, he's not, you know, a dominant high-volume post-up threat right now. He's got it in his bag, but it's not a shot that he should be going to over and over and over again. If it means, you know, you're running a contested DeAndre Ayton post-up versus a wide-open Mikal Bridges three or a wide-open Cam Johnson three, yes, you just play the math at this point.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
So let's go to the Clippers, Mort, who are currently number three in the West. They're 1.5 games behind the Suns. And similar to, I feel like they and the Milwaukee Bucks are having the same sort of deal this year, where just given what happened last year in the playoffs, it's like no one really wants to believe in this team being a championship contender. But Kawhi Leonard and Paul George are still on the team. Yep. And they've been especially hot as of late. So how do you think they stack up to these other teams in the West?
Well, full disclosure, I think a part of this is also because no one likes Marcus Morris. I truly think that actually plays a part here. I think they're the team, right? That's the team that can come out of nowhere. They still have the super high ceiling, but they also have a somewhat super low floor.
Yeah.
And because of that, it's always hard to gauge. I mean, this could be a team, again, theoretically, that could go into a series against the Jazz and somehow, some way, blow the pants off of them just because Kawhi Leonard is freaking Kawhi Leonard and Paul George is Paul George.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do I think that's going to happen? No. Why have I started asking myself questions like you did? I don't know. But here's the fact. Those two guys are the top tier ones. And after that, the drop off is real. And I wonder who is that third one who's going to step up. And don't say playoff Rondo or I am retiring from this podcast immediately.
Yeah, no, I think that's the big question with them is, you know,
Marcus?
Yeah, I mean, Ibaka, Pat Bev, Reggie Jackson, Lou Williams, Nick Batum. Like, they have a bunch of... The Clippers this year are how I felt about the Lakers last year, where it's like, we could not answer the question, who is their third best player?
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah.
And it ultimately didn't matter. You know, they had a different third best player on any given night, and it wasn't that big of a deal. But, yeah, the drop-off between the top two of the Clippers and then number three is probably more stark between them and any other contender that I can think of.
But that top two, though, I mean, let's rank them here in the course of the teams that we're talking about here.
Mm-hmm.
Kawhi and Paul George, those two are better than Devin Booker and Chris Paul.
Yep.
Those two together are also, in my opinion, better than Nikola Jokic and Jamal Murray, but it's getting close. I don't think the disparity is as great as it was a year ago, for example.
Right.
But right now, it's still Kawhi Leonard. It's still Paul George. I would take them.
Yeah, I think that I would
too.
That
duo is also, right?
Yeah.
It's close, but... And then that duo also, Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert,
mm-hmm.
still taking Kawhi and Paul George.
Yep.
And then it becomes the Lakers, right? Fully healthy LeBron, yeah. fully healthy AD, probably not.
Yeah.
But... not fully healthy LeBron, not fully healthy AD.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? Then we have a conversation.
And same deal with the Nets, too. Fully healthy KD, fully healthy Harden. I'm taking the Nets guys, but KD has missed a ton of time. Harden is currently out with a hamstring strain. Are we going to have a fully healthy Nets team in the playoffs? I hope so, because I want to see the best teams with all of their talent available, but I'm not 100% sure.
All right, so let's get into the East. I actually limited to just the West, but okay. East, Giannis and Middleton. Toss up?
Yeah, that seems fair.
Right?
Yeah. I might go the Clippers guy still.
Oh, but regardless, that has to be the closest one yet.
Yeah, for sure, for sure.
I'm so sorry about this, but taking Kawhi and Paul over Joe and Ben. Sorry.
Yeah. Oh, without question. Yeah, that's not a hot take.
I also take them over Bam and Jimmy.
Yep.
And then I'm still taking them over Jason and Jalen.
Yeah. So what? They have the third best duo in the NBA, we're arguing? They're behind KD and Harden. They're behind LeBron and AD.
Yeah.
I don't think they're behind anyone else.
No, I think that's fair. I think that's fair. So when you have a top three duo in the NBA that plays at the most essential positions also in the NBA.
Yep.
Because that matters. I think that just makes you impossible to ignore. I think if you go into a series and you just go, yeah, it's the Clippers. No.
Right.
Like, screw it. then you've drastically miscalculated just how dangerous they can become.
Yeah.
Kawhi's been great. By the way, can we just take a damn minute to talk about how Kawhi Leonard has only missed 10 games?
Mm-hmm.
Like, why are we not talking about him as an MVP guy?
You're so... Yeah. No, it's fair. It's fair.
What? No, it wasn't to revert it back to the quarter pod where I had him as my MVP. It wasn't. Truly, it wasn't. But, I mean, there's this perception that Kawhi sits out every single game.
Mm-hmm.
That's just not right, man. Yeah. 10 games missed. How many? Like, Joe has missed more time. Anthony Davis has missed more time. LeBron has missed more time. So many guys have missed more time.
Yep.
We finally are seeing a Kawhi who's going to go into the playoffs with a little bit more rhythm, I guess.
Hopefully. But here's the concern with the Clippers. Two concerns, I guess.
All right.
One, the third best player conundrum. Two...
You just said it wasn't a conundrum.
I know, but it could be.
All right.
I mean, like, the Lakers, it wasn't for them last year, but that's not to say for the Clippers this year it wouldn't be. Because if some team has the personnel to slow down Kawhi and Paul George, whoever that may be, maybe it's Milwaukee, then you do have to... Okay, who's supporting cast 3 through 15 is better, and I'm taking Milwaukee there. The other big factor, which, again, this goes back to last year, but... Pandemic P was a thing. Now, he hasn't been... I mean, he's just been back to really, really good Paul George this year. But he's got this right foot injury, or this toe injury in his right foot. And he says, you know, it basically, like, is just managing the soreness and swelling. It hasn't seemed to go away yet. So, are we going to get a fully healthy Paul George when we get to the playoffs? Or are we getting 85% of Paul George? If we do, how does that affect, you know, do we see the return of Pandemic P?
I have a bigger question at hand as well.
Okay.
Luke Kennard.
Mm.
We agree that Luke Kennard of last year would so very much clearly have been the playmaker that they needed this year, right?
Yeah.
And that he would have been the third best scorer at the very least.
Right, yeah.
What's the deal there?
Because I don't know.
Initially, it was about, oh, he wasn't hitting shots. Like, efficiency was low.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at the numbers right now, and the guy is sporting a 62.5% true shooting percentage right now. He's not turning the ball over a whole lot, a turnover percentage under 11.
Mm-hmm.
What's the deal here?
Yeah, no, it's a fair question. Because he has these games where it seems like he's really breaking out, and then he goes scoreless and plays 3 minutes the next game.
Right.
And it's like, he just can't seem to establish a consistent spot in the rotation, and I don't know if it's a Ty Lue thing, just not trusting him, or, yeah, I would love to know what the deal is there.
Yeah, I would too. I really would, especially considering the amount of money they're paying him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. They invested in him in a way that made you think, oh, okay, they believe in him as this nice long-term complementary piece to these two guys. Because as you said, based on what he did last year, the price they got him for was pretty reasonable.
Yep.
But we just haven't seen that version of him this year.
And when he was drafted, he came in as one of the most highly touted pick-and-roll players in the draft.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw that on display last year in Detroit as well. He really started picking up his pick-and-roll game.
Mm-hmm.
Now you have two multi-purpose wings, both who can function as ball handler and screeners. And you have Serge Ibaka, who, and Marcus Morris, for that matter, who can also set screens and roll or pop. Subac is there as well. Theoretically, you have all the components around Luke Kennard to put him in a setting where he can be successful.
Yeah.
Yet 19 minutes a game. I think that has to change going in, like right now. I think if you're the Clippers, you need to up his minutes so he can get some sort of traction going into the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because if not, what are we doing?
It's a fair question. So how do you think these Clippers stack up to the Lakers, to the Jazz, to the Suns, to the Nuggets?
Coin toss? No, I don't know. It's because you kind of touched on a good point there. Like, it just in terms of the depth. Utah has this solid nine, right? The Bucks have a lot of depth as well. The Lakers improved their depth over the summer. And then there's this question mark hovering over the Clippers. Like, yeah, I'm not concerned about their top two stars. I'm concerned about the top nine, top mm-hmm. 10.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think they get past Phoenix. I think if they hit Denver right, they could get by them. Because yeah. I'm not sure that Michael Porter Jr. would not relinquish about 40 points per game from Kawhi.
Right, yeah.
So I think that's in play. The Jazz, that's tough. That is tough. I feel like they are also just geared to be able to match this team. But again, this is Kawhi. I mean, I know that I have a bias for Kawhi. I acknowledge that. Mm-hmm. But look, the guy came into to Toronto and won a damn ring in the lone year he was there. I mean, you can't take people like that for granted. He's a guy who'll figure things out. He's just so smart out there. So I think they could beat Utah. I wouldn't necessarily put money on it because I would go into that series being super like insecure about either side. Like, I wouldn't know. I'd be very uncertain.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that holds true for the Lakers as well. Like, okay, if the Lakers are banged up, I'm actually going to go Clippers. But the Jazz, again, we seem to come back to the Jazz every single time.
Yeah.
It's the Jazz I'm worried about.
Yeah. Yeah, it's I don't know. The West is so weird, man. Ultimately, it comes down to, like, there are four or five teams that I think have a legit shot of getting out. We talked about the Nuggets last time, so we don't need to go too far into them. But, especially after the Gordon deal, I feel very good about their chances as well. Like, I could easily see them, especially considering what they did last year. Like, they beat the Clippers last year, you know? It's not like this is a we're betting on potential here. It's we've seen this team go far in the playoffs, and that was with Jokic is far better this year than he was last year.
Yes.
We've seen, bubble Jamal Murray was just in fuego for a month, but we've seen that version come out in the regular season now. We talked about, they didn't give up a ton in terms of short-term impact to get Gordon. And, right. Yeah, to your point, do they have the personnel to slow down both Kawhi and Paul George? No. Michael Porter and Aaron Gordon are going to have their hands full. But do the Clippers have the personnel to slow down Jokic? No. No,
not at all.
You can put Kawhi and Paul George on Porter and Gordon, but neither one of those guys are the two biggest offensive threats. You're Jamal Murray. So, Beverly is going to have to shut down Jamal Murray, basically, for them to have a good chance of emerging from that series.
Yeah, and he's not going to do that. Something we need to kind of address about Pat Bev is, he's still a good defensive player. I'm not going to sit here and argue otherwise. But he has grown a little slower. And I think there are games here and there where his barking is a little bit louder than his bark, I think it's fair to say.
Yeah, the reputation has exceeded what he is doing at this point in his
exactly.
career.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's not just him. Sometimes I think that applies to Marcus Smart as well, here and there.
Yeah.
And that's just the nature of the business, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But I do still think he's at that level where he can come in and really muck up things on a one-game sample size here and there. So if Beverly's defense can just swing one game by locking down Jamal Murray in game one or two, whatever, at some point in that series, that holds a lot of importance.
Yeah.
Now, of course, for crying out loud, we have to go there, don't we? Playoff Rondo. he's there.
Sure.
He's going to play because they gave up an absolute haul for him for a reason I just don't understand. I guess he's the second best point guard to put out there from a defensive perspective, which is, oh God, so sad to say. I really don't know what they were thinking. And honestly, a point of me is kind of like, was this their undoing? Is this going to hurt them so much that teams are just going to relentlessly attack him?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Maybe they're just better playing Reggie Jackson. It's tough. It's tough. Maybe you actually survive by throwing Marcus Morris on one of Porter or Gordon, and then you go, this is going to sound insane, but then you go Paul George on Jokic?
Mm-hmm.
The length?
You can do one of George or Kawhi on Jamal Murray, too.
You know what? In that case, that's a good point. Then I would rather have Paul George on Jamal and Kawhi on Jokic, because I think Paul is a little bit more nimble.
Mm-hmm.
He's not as strong at like an ox as Kawhi, who does have more weight on him. I think Paul moves around a little bit more effortlessly. He could probably stick to Murray a little bit more. And then you give up the length by having Kawhi guard Jokic, but it's Kawhi. I still think he'll lose a few matchups here and there just because of the raw physical size of Jokic.
Mm-hmm.
But he's gonna fight him every step of the way.
Yeah, totally.
I kind of like that. Okay. Oh, and Ibaka's there too. We kind of forgot about Ibaka.
Yeah. Yeah, and they have Zubac as well. Like they could match up, but it's gonna be.
Yeah. No. I mean, Jokic is definitely going to eat them if it's Ibaka and Zubac that are going to be their primary. Yeah.
So we hit the top five. Now there's this rest of this mix of Portland, Dallas, Memphis, San Antonio, Golden State, New Orleans, I think are the six teams realistically in playoff contention still, with all due respect to the Kings and the Thunder.
Do we even need to talk about them?
Well, do you buy any of those teams as potentially pulling a first-round upset?
Am I being a very harsh person if I say no?
No, because I mean, the top five is the top five for a reason. So it's, you know, it's called an upset for a reason.
No, okay. I'll here's what I'll say. I'll give Portland the I don't know how to frame this. I'll say they are probably the most likely to do so of that group that you just brought up. Am I betting on it? No way.
Yeah.
I'm really not. But I think if anyone can, it's just Dame going on a complete and utter tear, right? Like, it almost has to be him and CJ, both of whom averaging like 30-plus points per game, and then doing it. But, oh, man, that's a long way. I mean, I think that roster quality is just a whole notch below the ones we just talked about. So everything would have to fit completely right for Portland, but I mean, we've seen weirder things happen. So, yeah, of those teams, Portland, but I'm not betting on it.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen in recent games, Portland has gone up against Milwaukee, the Clippers, and the Jazz since the start of April and got smacked in all three of them. So there's the argument against them winning. It's, you know, their defense still leaves a lot to be desired, even though that was supposed to be a strong point. You know, they're 29th in defensive rating this year, even though they're 6th in offense. So they're trying the run and gun strategy, but they don't have the defensive horses to keep up. I will say, if you look at the roster and you look at how it's fitting, especially after the trade deadline, with Norman Powell in the mix as well, having Dame and CJ, having Norman Powell, Robert Covington can be the defensive wing. You have Nurkic, you have Cantor coming off the bench.
You know, doing an excellent job, by the way. I realize he's not a defender, but have you looked at that stat line?
The 30 rebounds.
God.
Yeah.
It's insane.
Yeah. So you have Cantor, Carmelo, Derek Jones. I guess guard depth would be your concern, like backup guard depth, especially after they traded Gary Trent Jr. for Norman Powell.
Yeah.
Because they have a lot of bigs and forwards, but yeah, like Anthony Simons is probably their third best guard right now.
Yeah, after moving off of yeah, I think so.
So
right? I mean, yeah, Paul is moving up a spot. Yeah, I think I agree with you on that one.
Yeah, so I mean, that's probably the area to attack. But yeah, we've seen, like, Lord knows we've seen Damian Lillard in the playoffs go off. So I don't want to totally rule them out, but I'm with you in thinking they are the most likely team to pull off an upset, but I still wouldn't necessarily bet on it. What about Dallas?
I love Luka so much, but no. I don't think he has the components next to him, and I realize they've been so much better since the All-Star break. I'm not going to ignore that. Mm-hmm. Truly, I'm not. But I just wonder, in a playoff setting, where is that extra offense going to come from outside of Luka and potentially KP? I mean, is Josh Richardson going to suddenly regain his touch? I mean, so he's been better recently. He's come up a little bit. Like, last time we spoke, I think he was below 30% shooting from outside. He's up on 32. And you can tell he's playing better.
Mm-hmm.
And Tim Hardaway Jr. is still relevant and all that. But I don't know. There's something about this roster where I just go, this isn't built for the playoffs.
Yeah.
And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I am absolutely wrong, and they come in and they just find another gear. Like, they run Jalen Brunson more minutes along with Luka. Maybe they do some things where you just go, oh, okay. Didn't really see this one coming. But when you look at that roster, and when you watch them play, you do feel that they have this tendency to go into lulls. They have this tendency to go into periods where, also defensively, they just can't compete to the same extent.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be pretty surprised if they did it. I'd be super excited, but I'd be surprised.
Yeah, I think it'll come down to what version of Kristaps do we get?
Yeah.
Because if we get the, like, actual number two star version next to Luka, and then we have the supporting cast of Tim Hardaway, Jalen Brunson, who has been fantastic this year, you know, get a more consistent version of Josh Richardson. You know, I think offense is going to be the question mark outside of the top three or four guys? Like, do they just have enough complementary scoring to get them past one of these very good teams? Because last year they had, you know, the best offense in NBA history. This year they're so good, they're 10th, but 10th in the league versus best in NBA history, there is a pretty steep drop-off there.
Yes.
So, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't rule it out, but I guess the question is, like, which of these teams are the top teams? Are any of these teams most likely to upset? I think it's the Suns just being there in the two seed, because, like, the, you know, if the Denver and Lakers stay at 4 and 5, Portland, then Dallas, all those teams aren't going to see them until at least the second or third round. So it's you know, if we're envisioning a first round upset here, it's probably against the Suns.
And then I think that's fair. I think that's fair.
And then you just have to ask yourself, you know, like, does Portland have the personnel? Does Dallas have the personnel? Like, Memphis, I think, has done a really good job with Jaren Jackson out all year, but I don't think they pose a real threat to any of these teams.
No.
You know, the Warriors have Steph Curry, but now James Wiseman suffered a meniscus injury. He's probably out for the year. Yeah. That is probably all she wrote for the Warriors. The Pelicans, do you think Point Zion can fuel an upset here?
Nope. I love it. I love the evolution. I think they're onto something, and I think that's super intriguing, but I would be shocked. I really would. When it comes to the Suns specifically, I wonder if Dallas is actually the team that matches up best with them, because then you have KP, who's basically going to draw out Aiden from the post, right? That's going to provide some driving lanes for both Brunson and Luka. I wonder if they have the depth, though, and if they have the defense. But it wouldn't... like it, let's put it this way. So the Suns and Mavs play. The Mavs come out on top. On a scale of 1 to 10, how surprised are you? 4?
Yeah, that seems about right.
Right? It's not where, oh my god, that's a 10. Like, you're like, oh, okay. And that's kind of what I mean when I said earlier the Suns are an elite team that are standing right outside looking into the party through the window.
Mm-hmm.
That's where that doubt is. That's where that little shadow of doubt is. If they were inside at the party, they're in. I'm not concerned. But the fact that they're just that tiny little bit outside the whole thing, that's what opens the door to everyone else, like, potentially being able to upset them. So I kind of think they're the weak link, as you already alluded to.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think you raise a good point about Porzingis attacking Ayton in particular, because Portland really doesn't have, I mean, Nurkic and Kanter.
Oh, yeah, no.
No, they're, you know, they might be able to feast against Ayton regardless, but it's not pulling him away from the basket feasting. It's a different type of dominance against him.
Right.
What about the Spurs? We got to shout out our boy Jesse.
That's
true. Talk about the Spurs.
That's true. Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're outside the playoff picture right now. They're 9th, so we're looking at them in for a play-in. I think, ultimately, if we go back to the Suns once again, and we put Dejounte Murray on Devin Booker, and we basically tell Dejounte, you don't even have to take a shot.
just shut this dude down. That's all you do.
Yeah. And then you go point DeRozan, point forward DeRozan, whatever the hell he is right now, whatever he is, he's good. And then you flank them with the shooting of Derek White, Patty Mills, Lonnie Walker. Even I'm still skeptical of Lonnie Walker's efficiency, but okay. Rudy Gay.
Kelton Johnson a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think he's much of a shooter yet, but I think he'll get there. But he's a guy who can get into the mid-range area and get to the basket, so there's some potential there. Jakob Poeltl can be interesting, right? I mean, just as an aimed matchup, he's not a guy who's usually being shouted out a whole lot, but he's good. Like, he just understands what a good shot is around the basket. he's a good defender, like he rotates properly. He's a horrible, horrible free throw shooter, and that's a problem. But he's just, he takes so few of them that I'm not super concerned. Devin Vassell.
Mm-hmm.
Devin Vassell could be interesting. Like, just put him on Mikal Bridges and go to town. Hmm. It would be fun. I'm still picking the Suns, but it would be fun.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I would too, but I don't think I would pick the Suns in 4 or 5.
No. This would be a hard-fought 7, if anything.
Yeah.
Let's look at the Spurs here for a second, because obviously we have the opinion that we have because we feel the Spurs are missing something.
Right. Well, they're missing a top tier player.
Right. Yeah, you're right. It's strictly a talent thing as well. Like, so I'm going to say this, and I think you would agree with me. Derek White was just tremendous in the bubble.
Yep.
And we kind of thought that he would duplicate that effort and over the course of this year. I think it's fair to say that hasn't happened. Plus, he's been out a ton. So, and that's obviously not his fault. But when he's played, he's been rather inefficient. 40% from the field, 32% from three. But he, more importantly, he hasn't looked as aggressive as he did in the bubble.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, when we were talking about the Spurs before the year, we were going in saying, oh, you know, Derek White is there. He's in his prime. You know, we were talking him up. And now that he hasn't hit that ceiling that we thought he could, and no one else has really stepped in to fill that void, we're kind of looking at that as a whole team going, yeah, they're nice, but they're talented, but they have experience, but it, like, there's just this follow-up all the time, because at the end of the day, they're short on talent. Everyone is good, but no one is truly elite.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, like, DeMar DeRozan right now is still their best player.
Yeah. Super good, but not elite. Like, not a top-tier one elite player.
Right. Yeah, exactly. It's like, I like their supporting cast. It's the opposite problem of what the Clippers have, where I really like their supporting cast. I like their options, really, like, 2 through 15, 3 through 15, whatever the case may be.
Yeah.
It's just, do they have that like superstar player who can carry them in crunch time, who can manufacture buckets on his own?
They used to, but he plays for the Clippers now.
Right, unfortunately. I mean, maybe they do like a by committee thing and it works, but would I pick that in a playoff series over a Denver, a Utah, any of the LA teams? Probably not.
You know what it is? You know what it is? I think I figured it out. I don't fear any one of them. So don't get me wrong. I fear DeRozan's passing. I fear his drives. But I know that if I'm a smart team, I will make him a jump shooter. If I'm a great defensive-minded team, I can turn him into a jump shooter.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Deontay Murray, somewhat the same story. I fear his defense. I fear his playmaking. I fear his rebounding. I don't fear the jumper. Beat me by shooting. Come on, I dare you. Derek White, same story. Shoot away. As long as you don't take it to the cup. If I'm a great defensive team, I'll force you into jump shots. Who is that one guy who can consistently, and I mean consistently, come in and shoot the ball at a very high rate, at a very high percentage? There's one guy, and that's Patty Mills. And you know what? I love Patty. But if I am on a championship trajectory, at no point should I fear the play of Patty Mills.
Fair. You maybe just look this up. What you just said sparked my curiosity here. Spurs are actually second in the league in drives per game.
Yeah.
Which I would not have expected. And to their credit, I mean, we've sounded this for years about, you know, they're not shooting enough threes. They're still not, really. They're 29th in both threes attempted and made this year. But it does feel like they're at least Derek White has a green light. Patty has a green light. So Pop is still kind of reluctant to embrace the full-fledged, like, Houston and what Utah is doing this year, what Golden State did in years past. He's not, like, giving everyone the green light, but part of that's also personnel based too, I would assume.
Right. I was just about to say, do we know that? Because when you look at these players, it doesn't seem like anyone outside of Patty really has that golden touch from outside.
Right. Or yeah, I mean, Vassell, we'll see. He's shooting well just on low volume.
Right.
So, like, he could develop into that. But, yeah, I mean, DeJounte Murray is not a natural three-point shooter. Derek has just been an inconsistent. He's streaky. He can hit him, but he's just streaky.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, that's probably another concern if you're looking ahead to the playoffs. Can they keep up with an offense like Utah, like the Clippers, like the Lakers?
Here's a fun thought experiment.
Okay.
If you just take the number two guy on a good team, like a Chris Middleton, for example, and you put him on this team.
Ooh.
No, but how much does that change the entire makeup of that roster?
Oh, I thought you were going to say, is he the best player on this team?
Oh, I yes.
Yeah, I think so.
He would be, I think. But it's more than that, just having someone like him who can shoot from outside, who can defend at a high level, who can rebound, who can play make, like do a little bit of everything, put him into that context of that roster, that changes the entire roster, like on a fundamental point. I mean, DeMar DeRozan suddenly is freed up to becoming this secondary ball handler who can really pick and choose his spot. Everyone else can sort of pick and choose their offensive spots so much easier. They just need that one more guy. And I don't know what their plans are. I don't know if they're going to keep DeRozan next year and then just roll it all back again. They just need that one more guy.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think they, like every team that doesn't have one already, they need that star wing.
Yeah.
But that's much easier said than done. Like, even put a Michael Porter Jr. on this team. Not even like an established wing, but just someone with that upside.
Yeah. No, I mean, I hadn't thought about that, but that's actually super interesting. Like, of all the young players around the league, like, yeah. I mean, would you rather have Michael Porter or pick whoever young guy on the Spurs?
Right.
Yeah.
I think they're there, though. Depends on his health, I guess.
That's true. And how much he says out loud publicly.
Yeah, right.
And look, this is interesting as well because we need to take this into account for next year. Devin Vassell, if he pops, then they're right there. Mm-hmm. Then they have that guy. Like right now, he's a rookie, like playing 17 minutes a game. I mean, he's doing well, but obviously next year you have to assume a minutes increase. What if he becomes that guy? What if he becomes like the new Chris Middleton? That could change the outlook of this team moving forward. I think I don't think we're in for like a long rebuilding / retooling period for the Spurs. I just think they need to add the right pieces next to their young core. And then DeRozan, I guess we'll find out. But I'm not down on these Spurs. I just don't think as of right now, compared to the teams that we're talking about, that they're super relevant.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, agreed. Yeah, I really liked some of their young guys, a lot of their young guys.
Yeah.
And you're right. Like, if DeRozan, Patty, Rudy are all on expiring contract, if any of them leave this summer, that's going to open more opportunities for some of the young guys next year. So, yes, I don't think we're looking at the Spurs turning into what Houston is this year, instance. But, yeah, they still need to hit on that. Whether one of the guys that they already have turns into it, or they draft someone, sign someone in free agency, they're slated to have, I think, north of $50 million in cap room this summer. So Kawhi coming back home? I don't know.
You know, that's never going to happen, but I want it to.
Yeah. Or like him going back to Toronto would be funny too.
Oh, yeah. Or, right, well, or just hear me out here. Dallas.
Stop trying to give Luka more people.
Come on. Look, you cannot blame me for trying to get my guy another guy. Come on.
I know. That's fair. All right. Well, that's a good place for us to wrap up. So thank you, as always, for listening in today. Please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We're being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. And thanks for listening to our live show on Locker Room. If you liked our show, please be sure to start your own room and engage with other fans on the app. Download the Locker Room app in the Apple App Store to be a part of our podcast. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Have a good one, Mort.
You too, man. Take care.